your sporting news, reviews and previews. This is The Sports Desk.
Hello and welcome to The Sports Desk. You're on Sin and we're going to be driving you home for another amazing Friday in Melbourne. I'm your host Liam Cole. I'm joined alongside Ethan Rigg, Toby Hansen and Jerry Am. Welcome guys.
How's it going?
Welcome back, Toby. How is Sydney? I was a little bit worried there that Ethan Rigg scared you away, but you are back for another week, which is good.
Very excited to be back here up in Sydney last weekend for something that we'll touch on a little bit later on with the A-League Grand Final, but very happy to be back in studio and plenty of sport news happened this week.
I reckon this is one of the biggest shows in terms of content that we've ever had this season, I reckon, Ethan.
Oh, 100%. There's so much to go over. I reckon this one, and not the Monday just gone, but the week before.
Oh, yeah.
In terms of headlines and big stories, definitely.
What are you most looking forward to in this weekend of sport, Ethan?
Ooh,
Champions
League final.
Oh, yeah. We'll get into that a little bit later on the program. Jerry, do you think North Melbourne, is it their time this weekend to get on the board?
Well, we've got the bye. So.
Well, that's a win, I think, for you guys. All right, Toby, you've got some news on the Melbourne Rebels.
Yeah, big news coming out of Melbourne yesterday. So after 14 years, 64 wins, and soon to be their first and final finals campaign, at 10 a.m. yesterday, Rugby Australia announced the axing of their Victorian-based franchise, the Melbourne Rebels. The news was broken to players some 2 hours before they were to board a plane to Nadi for this weekend's clash against the Fijian Drua. The club has been in administration since January, with debts owed to the creditors exceeding $23 million, including an $11.5 million debt to the Australian Tax Office.
Well, $22 million, that's... in debt, that's huge. I mean, I'm not sure what their administrators were doing. Obviously, the league has to, you know, put their hands up and have some responsibility into that. But, you know, they've had a pretty good season making finals and now they're, you know, no such a thing.
I think it's quite sad, to be honest, because Melbourne is such a massive sporting city and to not have a rugby team across both codes will... do us a lot more harm than good over here. And I think it's a sad day for rugby in Australia as well to axe one of your Victorian teams. It's not a good look for the state of the sport in the country.
Ethan, you've got some soccer news tonight.
I do, and we're going over to the Midlands, over to Birmingham, which is probably the only time I'd ever want to say that. And it's that Unai Emery signs a new deal at Aston Villa, having guided the Villans to fourth place and Champions League football in the season just gone. He's done an amazing job and it caps off a brilliant 18 months or so of him in charge at Villa Park. When he took over, they were close to the relegation zone after sacking Steven Gerrard. He dragged them up the league to seventh and then they pushed on this season once again to finish fourth and reached a European semi-final for good measure. Thoroughly deserved. And another extension as well is that Ipswich boss Kieran McKenna, having got the Tractor Boys up this season, has been given another 4-year deal at Portman Road to see how they go.
The Tractor Boys, is that what they call them?
That's what they're called.
That's shocking. Yeah, Aston Villa, they've had a really good season, haven't they? They've recruited well. And do you think this contract, obviously, I don't think they mean much contracts these days. Do you think this will stick?
I hope so. I like Unai Emery at Aston Villa. I think it's a good fit. I mean, I've got a bit of a soft spot for Aston Villa as it is. But I like this move. And I like the fit of Unai Emery at Villa. They play good football. He's got an exciting squad together. Like you said, they strengthen so well. I thought, honestly, this time last year they won the transfer window by bringing in Pau Torres as well as Moussa Diaby as well. And yeah, I'm excited to see what they can do in the Champions League next season and excited to see how Emery starts to really build this project and where he goes next.
Let's head over to France, of all places, where there's a big tennis tournament going on.
Yeah, well, the French opening is happening and there's been some big upsets, I guess, and some close calls. So we'll start off with the men's. We had Nadal, the 14-time champion, get knocked out by 4th seed Alexander Zverev, 6-3, 7-6, 6-3. So
Ooh,
pretty sad there, yeah, because, you know, he's a
King of clay, Kerry.
King of clay, 112 to 4 record there. So, yeah, it's astounding. I don't know if he'll be back. I think it's his last French Open. So, yeah, if it was, a tough send-off, but good on him. And a few Aussies also through to the third round. Demna, number 11th seed, knocked off Muna 7-5, 6-1, 6-4. So it's his first time in a round of 32. And then Tanasi Kokkinakis came back from two sets down to defeat one of the Italian hopes. So he won 1-6, 4-6, 6-3, 7-6, 6-2. And then on the women's side, number one seed Iga Swiatek narrowly avoided losing the four-time Grand Slam champ Naomi Osaka. So she won 7-6, 1-6, 7-5 after saving a match point. And then also Sabalenka, number two seed, straight through against Yuchijima, 6-2, 6-2. Goff, number third seed, through against Zidanzeg, 6-3, 6-4. And then Rybakina, 6-3, 6-4 as well. So the women's top four seeds are still in, and also the men's as well. Djokovic, Sinner, Alcaraz are still in. So there's still some major players there, Liam.
Is Swiatek the player to beat, do you reckon?
Yeah, she won Rome leading up to it. And she's a reigning two-time champ at the French Open. So she's a player to beat.
Before we head to the break, Jofra Archer is back in cricket, which is super excited. Yeah, super exciting. We've missed him so much. Which has reminded me, which players do you miss the most that do not play anymore? Starting with you, Ethan.
Oh, I'm about to take a deep dive into some ancient Evertonian lore for all of you here. And Gerard De La Feuille is probably the one for me. He first arrived at Everton in 2013 and was absolutely brilliant under Martinez. Quick feet, exciting, electric Spaniard. Kind of reminded me of Kevin Morales, who's another name I had. Belgium, also at Everton, came in under David Moyes. I loved watching both of them. They were just so, so good. When it was their day, they were untouchable. And even when it wasn't, were capable of some of the most brilliant moments.
All right, Toby?
Yeah, I think De La Feuille was the one that got away for Everton, wasn't he? He was a phenomenal player.
It still hurts.
For me, I think the player that I always like to think about, for me, a bit of a weird one, I loved Xavier Doherty for whatever reason growing up. Thought his left arm tweakers. It's giving big, getting belted by South Africa in Hobart, Xavier Doherty.
Clint McKay as well.
Clint McKay, yeah.
Hilfenhaus.
That series against England, Faulkner run down the runs up in Brisbane.
Oh, that was a good
that sort of era of Australian cricket when England were terrible.
Terrible.
I don't know why, it just always sticks out of my mind. You could list off those players for days.
I'll go with, I'd probably say Nick Riewoldt, but that's a bit too obvious being a Saints fan. You've got to say Cyril Rioli. I think some of the stuff that he did, I think he retired way too soon. So I'll have him for tennis. I think Gael Monfils, some of the stuff he could do, Jerry, was unbelievable on court.
Still playing.
Yeah, I mean, not like he's not
the same.
He's
level.
Not that yet. Yeah. He's getting old. What about you, Jerry?
Oh, Roger Federer, his class and elegance on the field was just, impeccable.
All right, stick around. There's plenty more coming up on the Sports Desk, including our Champions League final preview on set to the Champions League final.
It is all eyes to Wembley for the jewel in the European crown. It's the Champions League final on Sunday night, and it is two massive clubs in the European game. 14-time champs Real Madrid taking on two-time winners Borussia Dortmund. A lot of stories about this game, guys. It's obviously redemption day, potentially, for Marco Reus in his final game for BVB. Jude Bellingham as well. You have the angle of the hometown boy coming back to Wembley, first season in Spain. It all shapes up for a brilliant game. The second best attack in Europe for Los Blancos coming up against the Yellow Wall, quite literally, as Dortmund have the best defence in Europe. I just want to get some predictions for the game on Sunday, guys.
I hope Dortmund will win. I love an underdog, Toby, but can you make a case for Dortmund winning? Because obviously Real are the favourites.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think when you think Real Madrid, that's probably one of the biggest club sides in the world. I do like this Dortmund side. And like I said, I love an underdog. At Wembley, it's probably written for them a little bit. Would love to see a Dortmund win come Sunday morning.
Jerry?
I think Real will be too strong, probably 2-0.
I'm with Jerry on this one. I see extra time. to be honest. I see 1-1 at the end of the 90, but I've got Real Madrid edging it after extra time 2-1. I love a Dortmund story. I love the run that they've had to the final and the team that they've got. But it just feels inevitable for me in the other way that Jude Bellingham is going to score the winner for Real Madrid at Wembley in extra time to win them their 15th European crown and cap off the perfect first season in Spain for him. But it wasn't the only final that's caught the eye of the footballing world this week, because down here we spoke last Friday about the A-League Grand Final and we had somebody live there road tripping all the way up to Sydney. Tell us about the experience, Toby. What was it like?
Yeah, well, talking about finals that went to extra time, of course, this one played out the full 120 minutes up on the Central Coast in Gosford, a lovely stadium up there if you ever get the chance to head that way. But yeah, it's a really interesting game of football. It was a game that probably for 89, 91 minutes, the Melbourne side dominated and probably should have won. They were 1-0 up, 91st minute, Central Coast equalised. And then they put two more on in injury time to claim a treble, the treble, probably not, but a treble. And they've gone back-to-back as well, the Central Coast Mariners. Big shout-out to that Melbourne Victory team who were almost undefeated at the new year. They went right through the season in that top three, four. They got through a couple of times through injury time and penalties and then had 3,000 supporters up there to watch them as well.
Yeah, it was a great final. Do they still have the sauce bottle?
Oh, well, no, they didn't.
They got rid of it.
Yeah, on Saturday night, we got to our seats there on the wing and had a look over, and there was temporary seating there, no sauce bottle. So disappointing. I have been to Gosford before, and I have seen the sauce bottle, so I wasn't too upset. But a couple of our travelling party was a bit gutted.
It would have been a disappointing night for Melbourne Victory fans. Obviously, went ahead into the second half, and were in control of that game for most of it. But it's the theme throughout the season for them that's cost them again. 11th goal they've conceded in stoppage time this season, guys. It's really unacceptable, and they looked knackered after that goal went in. It felt inevitable that at home, Central Coast were going to go over the top, Toby.
Yeah, and it's quite a theme. If you watch this Melbourne Victory team, it's quite a theme with Tony Popovich's style of football. They defend quite deep very early. They tie themselves out for the last 30 minutes of the game, defending so deep. That last line of four or five, how many they're playing down back. Teams almost inevitable to score. They're almost asking for teams to attack at them. We saw it, like I said, we saw it in Wellington a couple of weeks ago, and then we saw it again on Saturday night up in Gosford.
Was it a choke?
Yeah.
Say it how it is on the sports desk.
Well, yeah, call a spade, it probably was. I think Central Coast are a great side. They were favourites going in, but on the day, Melbourne Victory were the better side. The Victorians should have won it on the day.
Yeah, definitely no sauce bottles, but Victory did bottle this one.
That's very good. Let's head to the NBA playoffs.
Well, we started off on Tuesday with the Celtics sweeping the Pacers 105 to 102. Once again, it was a combo of Jaylen Brown and Tatum proving too strong. Brown dropped 29 points, had 6 rebounds, 2 assists. Tatum had 26 points, 13 rebounds, 8 assists. And Holiday and White also chipped in with 17 points and 16 points respectively. And then on Wednesday, we had the Timberwolves defeating the Mavericks 105 to 100. Edwards dropping 29, 10 rebounds and 9 assists. Carl Anthony Towns dropping 25 points, 5 rebounds and 1 assist. And also Conley Jr. with 14, Gobert 13, 10 rebounds. The key stat there was it was 46 to 36 points in the paint, and the Mavs led 3-1 in the Western Conference Finals. And then today the Mavs defeated the Timberwolves 124 to 103 pretty convincingly. Irving and Doncic again just proved too strong. Both dropped 36 points. Luka Curry outscored the Timberwolves 44-40 in the first half, so that was pretty astounding. And then also that means it's a 4-1 victory to the Mavs, and they're through to their first final since 2011. Doncic, the finals MVP there with 32.4 points per game averaging. So game one will be next Friday at 10:30 a.m. And I think it will be a close one, but I think Boston get it in six.
All right, let's head to the Cricket World Cup. Come on, Margie, come on, come on. and the T20 Cricket World Cup have sort of crept up on us, I think it's fair to say. It starts June the 2nd in the USA of all places and the Caribbean. What are our predictions, Ethan?
Wow. I can see a lot of the big boys going through. The groups are quite favourable for all of the bigger ICC nations. From Group A, I've got India and Pakistan in a 1-2. Group B, England ahead of Australia. Group C, New Zealand and one of the host nations, the West Indies. Group D might be a bit of a shock. Afghanistan, solid cricketing nation. Sri Lanka have a lot of history. But I've gone for Bangladesh finishing behind South Africa, who should make it to the Super 8 and top the group. I could see an England-Pakistan quarter, potentially. But overall, there might be a bit of a Cinderella run here for South Africa. This is their chance, I think, with this crop of players, with Quinton de Kock, Aidan Markram, obviously Marco Janssen's in there, Kagiso Rabada as well. And I would have got them playing England in the final, and wherever it goes from there, I think I might believe it before. Moderately biased.
So they have changed the group stages in a way. So it used to be the big teams already qualified, and then they had the associate nations to get in the group stage, Super 8, basically. But now they've combined it. You a fan of that, Toby?
Yeah, I don't mind it. They sort of flips it on the head there. They'll play this group stage first, and it's really interesting. It throws up these matchups we wouldn't normally see. So Australia's in their group. Obviously, we've got England, the old enemy. But then we've got Oman, Namibia and Scotland, three cricketing nations we probably wouldn't play in any other sort of tournament. So I like what they've done. They've flipped it up, and this new high-scoring sort of T20, potentially in that Group D, it might throw a couple spanners in the work.
What I like about this new setup, actually, is that a lot of the newer nations into international cricket get to score some proper ICC points. I think that's only a really good thing for the game. And to see nations like Uganda and Nepal at a Cricket World Cup is the furthest thing from a bad thing for the game of cricket. I like it. I know you might not have been the biggest fan, Liam,
of
the new setup,
yep.
But I think it's good for the game.
Okay, fair enough. Do you think India, obviously I think they've got the best team on paper, but historically they do choke. They haven't won a World Cup since 2011, and for the team and the players that they've had, prime Virat Kohli, Rohit Sharma, they're not getting any younger. Is this their chance, finally?
I think India have honestly missed their window.
Mm.
I think that period from 2016 to 2021, where they had the two T20 World Cups and the one-day one in England as well, was their chance to win a major cricketing tournament. I think with this group of players now, it's definitely Virat and Rohit's last chance. But I'm just not convinced, Liam. I think they've got a strong bowling attack. I like Bumrah and I like Siraj, but there's something about India for me that, with it having not come together for so long, I only really see that trend continuing. What do you think?
Well, I think it's spin to win. I think if they're going to dish out roads like in the IPL, where 220 is par, which is ridiculous, and the battle between bat and ball is not existent, then I think spin to win, change of pace is the key. And if you look at teams who have great spinning teams, it's probably Afghanistan that lead that charge. You've got Rashid Khan, Mujib, Noor Ahmed, Nabi, and then you've got some really good fast bowlers and some change-up bowlers. So I think they should really contend for at least a semi-final appearance under Jonathan Trott, Ethan.
As much as I love Jonathan Trott as a cricketer, I'm not convinced by Afghanistan. For the similar reasons with India, they have a great team on paper, right? And when it comes to any of these international tournaments, I have not once seen them deliver. I've not once seen Afghanistan really make it to the knockout phase of a tournament and give any of the big boys a lot of trouble. And although they do have a good mix-up for T20, it's never clicked for some reason. And with this group of players, I can't see a way in which that changes.
Well, they do have time. A lot of them are very young. Noor Ahmed, Rashid Khan, he's only 25. It feels like he's been around for almost a decade. So, I mean, Gurbaz, their top-order batsman, you know, 21, 22 years of age. So How have you seen the prep for Australia? Do you think, Jerry, that they can win it?
Yeah, well, possibly. They've got a good squad leading up to it. So I think the key there is Travis Head, because he clutched up last year in the ODI World Cup, and I think it's either Head or nothing, really. Yeah. I think England will be pretty strong as well, so they've got their heads cut out there, Australia.
Who do you think will be the breakout players for this year? We'll start with you, Toby.
Yeah, it's hard to see. I've liked, in this Australia, a couple of Australian warm-ups, I've liked Nathan Ellis. I thought he looked okay. But, yeah, it's sort of hard to tell. We were sort of speaking off air. There's not too many players that are not already well-known, either because of the IPL or the various franchise leagues around the world. So hard to say. I know he's a really well-known name. There's someone that spoke about him off air, but I thought Jansen looks really good as a great fast bowler. He just bowls quick.
Good finisher as well.
So. Yeah. He's a phenomenal cricketer.
Hits a big ball.
He does.
Played well. Very big ball.
In the SAT20. So, Jerry, what do you think? Breakout player for this tournament?
I think Rachin Ravindra. He's had an all right IPL and he can bat, he can bowl. So, yeah, I think he can do both and he's in high demand at the moment.
It's a good play. Speaking of New Zealand, do we think the Mr. Nice Guys, do we think they're a chance? Because I don't think you can win when you're playing Ish Sodhi.
I've just got to say as well, I've seen Ravindra score a World Cup 100 against England, so that's a great shout. I didn't even consider Ravindra, but he's a very good player and has fit so well into that New Zealand team. I do. I think New Zealand are definitely a look-in because, yes, okay, Ish Sodhi's spin leaves a lot to be desired sometimes, but they've got the pace. Adam Milne, Lachie Ferguson, Matt Henry, they've got some proper fast bowlers.
But it's more spin to win, isn't it?
Not in the West Indies.
Oh, it's...
Nation with that much of a legacy of fast bowlers, you need guys who can bowl 140-plus. New Zealand have got two who can bowl 150-plus, and I think Matt Henry's a top-class bowler. So I could see them doing very well in this tournament. And we always say this about New Zealand. They're the nice guys of cricket. Is it when it finally comes undone? And they always overachieve. They remind me a lot of Croatia in football. So I don't see that stopping for New Zealand at any time soon. Kane's there. Everyone's there. There's no reason they shouldn't do well.
I need Finn Allen to really step up. He showed a lot of signs, but they probably need him to be probably the top five leading run scorer in the tournament, I think.
I think so too. They need somebody to go with the other bats that they've got or to be that standout other than what Williamson has been. Is he your shout for a breakout star, Finn Allen?
Not Finn Allen. Oh, no. I'm going Akshar Patel for India. As I said, spin to win. He's made his name in Asia, especially. He's had a really good IPL tournament. He's done really well in the red ball cricket for India. I think it's time to make his name in white ball international cricket.
I like him. Can bat as well.
All right.
Very handy bat.
Just quietly, when you say spin to win in this tournament, this morning Adam Zampa went for 15 and a half an over. I don't know if it's been... I haven't seen the American pitches. I haven't seen the North American pitches, sorry. We've seen twice now in Australian warm-up games the pitches in the Caribbean. Don't know if it's spin to win. Granted, okay. Hazelwood got belted around as well, so what do I know?
Well, it's a road for anyone, really.
So it'll be interesting to see, but I think we're going to see very similar to the IPL. We're going to see very high-score games. It's not going to be a bowler's World Cup.
What have we made of the broadcast deal? So it's not on any free-to-air channel. Usually it'd be on Channel 9 or even Fox Sports, but now it's just on Amazon. How do we feel about that, guys?
It's an interesting one, definitely, to move it from a more recognised broadcaster onto Amazon Prime, which is still very much breaking its way into it when it comes to broadcasting sports. But I think it's a bold move, especially with an American audience. It appeals more so to that, which I understand. It's their first World Cup for not just them and for Canada. And it's one of the major broadcasting rights there. So I can understand it, even if it might be a bit detrimental to us over here in Australia.
So the ICC, so the Cricket Australia broadcast deals, this is with the ICC because it's an ICC-run tournament. So for the next 5 years, all ICC tournaments will be with Amazon Prime. Australia is the only country in the new broadcast deal with the ICC that does not have a linear broadcast for this World Cup or future World Cups until 27. So we're the only country that will not have an ICC tournament on TV. It'll only be through the streaming platform.
That's not.
It's silly.
Yeah, that's not a great look. I think, especially with how big cricket is over here, some people would argue it's our national sport, to be honest with you. I think that Cricket Australia are shooting themselves in the foot by not letting the public in Australia have access to cricket, especially at an ICC tournament where the Aussies usually do all right.
Who's our winner? I'll go Australia. Oh, you've got England, Ethan.
I've got England.
No, there's something in that. There's something in that. We stumble our way through the group stage, just get through the Super 8s, and then like that World Cup in India, was it last year? The World Cup in India.
No one expected Australia to win.
The Bison leads us to victory. Maybe I'll save that for my unpopular opinion later, but there's something in that, I reckon, Liam.
Just one thing on the teams that win it. I think the West Indies are going to have a very, very good tournament this time around, guys. I don't know about you.
They're dangerous.
I love West Indies cricket. Always get excited seeing the West Indies at a World Cup, especially Alzari Joseph, who's a well-known name, but has never really stamped himself on an ICC tournament. And I think at a home World Cup, this is his chance. He's going to take it. He bowls thunderbolts. He is a half-decent bat. And I think he's going to lead the Windies to a semi-final, maybe even the final. I think I see him playing South Africa, and that game could genuinely go either way.
Who's your winner, Jerry?
I think New Zealand will take it over.
Oh my. Wow. Why is that?
I don't know. I think Ravindra will just go crazy.
Okay. Wow, big calls on the sports desk, and that's why you should stick around. There's plenty more coming up, including our... All right, we'll speak about last night's game, and it was the Blues and their massive last quarter, beating the Power by 36 points at the Adelaide Oval, 7-1 from stoppage in that last quarter. How good was Paddy Cripps, Toby?
Oh, he was unbelievable, wasn't he? 34 disposals, split perfectly down the middle between kicks and handballs, 13 tackles, which is an unreal effort, and 8 clearances to go with it. No, that wasn't the same. That was Sam Walsh I was just reading. Sam Walsh was incredible last night as well.
Both were great.
But Cripps was incredible. So a couple goals to his name. The Blues, they put 7-8 goals on in the last term. Thought they were fantastic.
Port Pretenders, we speak about this all the time, guys, but, you know, they're 8-4. Their defence looks leaky again. They've recruited Radaglia, Zirk Thatcher. Are they the guys, Jerry, that will take him to a premiership?
It looks, creaky, as you said, because they let Kerno, Mackay and Williams all kick free, so it's hard to tell whether, you know, they're frauds or not.
Fraud watch, yeah. As Justin would say. Ethan, what do you make of the Port Power?
I feel like we have this conversation every week.
We do.
Whether Port are pretenders or not. It's one of your favourite. One of your favourite ones. And, you know, I might be starting to see the light a little bit. A lot of problems for the Power. Leaking that many goals in the last quarter. Having the complete contrast from 2 weeks ago where they closed out a game really well against Hawthorn to last night where I thought they managed it terribly. And defensively, they looked all over the gaff.
It was a big, home and away win for the Blues, and we know how hard it is to win at the Adelaide Oval.
Are they contenders after last night?
I think they've got the core, haven't they? They've got Mackay, Kerno, who was really hard to beat, and then they've got the midfield. So Wietering down back, it's pretty good, isn't it, Toby?
Yeah, they're all right. I'm not convinced by them just yet. Like, if we look back 2 weeks ago, they were outside the eight. Yes, they've won a couple in a row. They're back inside the four, I think, momentarily. But I don't know if they're contenders at the moment. They're a good side, though, definitely.
I'm a Toby on this one. I think they're starting to get it together, but they're a little bit off the pace.
Let's move on to tonight's game, and it is the Pies taking on the Western Bulldogs at Marvel Stadium. Let's have a look at the ins and outs. For Collingwood, they get Markov, Bytel, Ash Johnson, Jeremy Howe in Finlay McRae, all in and out. They've got Allen omitted. Scott Pendlebury, he's out for a month. Brodie Myercheck is injured. Joe Richards, Mason Cox is out. And for the Western Bulldogs, James O'Donnell, Rory Lobb, Lockie McNeil is in. And then you got Scott Norton and Richards out. How do we see this, Jerry?
I think Norton and Richards are huge outs because Richards has had a incredible impact in the midfield and Norton's been kicking a lot of goals. So I just think Collingwood, will be too strong for Bulldogs.
Are the injuries too much, Toby, for the Pies?
I don't know if they're too much for the Pies. I think the Dogs are playing all right footy at the well, at least last week, they were all right against the Swans. They probably held up for three quarters. As soon as Richards and Norton went down last week, that was game over for them, I think. The Pies will be lifted a little bit with how Markov comes back in. I don't mind Ash Johnson. I think he's an all right footballer. But definitely losing Pendlebury, losing Brody Mychek. I'm not his biggest fan, but losing Mason Cox as well probably does a bit of damage height-wise as well.
Ethan?
Oh, it's a tough one to call. I think Collingwood, I think they're going to edge this one. I know the Dogs have had a few good weeks, and they do look like they're finally starting to become a team that we know they're capable of being, but Collingwood still have it in them to win close games. I don't think it will be by much, but I've got them just about edging this.
I think there'll be an upset. I think the Bulldogs will win. I think they've had a really good month after the Hawthorn loss, so we'll see. Let's move on to tomorrow's game, and it's at the MCG with Adelaide taking on Hawthorn. Just the one in for Hawthorn. Ned Reeves comes in for the injured Lloyd Meek, and no changes for the Crows, Toby.
Yeah, the Crows, they're building a little bit. I had them in my top four at the start of the season. I don't think they're going to make the eight, but they're building a little bit. They're showing us a bit. They've got a great side. Not sure what exactly is not clicking. Rankin down forwards, kicked 20 this season. And then Matt Crouch gets one disposal on the weekend. He's got 300 already for the season. So they've got an all right team against the Hawks, a side that they had a good win last weekend against the Lions. They had a good win against the Dogs a couple of weeks ago, but I don't know. It's a tough one to pick at the MCG.
How good has the Hawks' last month been, Ethan?
Aside from the last quarter implosion in Adelaide, I'm cautiously optimistic, Liam. I think it's been a real test of character the last month, especially after another rough start. And I think we're finally starting to see what this group is about. It's similar to Adelaide, it's starting to come together. It didn't click early on, but Hawthorn seem to be in a really good place right now, and they seem to be playing some really good football, and to be honest with you, I don't see that stopping on Saturday.
It's a danger game, Jerry, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I think Adelaide played well at the MCG a few weeks ago, so they might do the same again.
All right, let's move on to St Kilda. They are heading west against the West Coast Eagles, and the Eagles have got Harry Edwards in, Matt Flynn for his first game for the club. Zane True, Andrew Gaff and Patrick Challey all come back in, with Rotham out, Hunt, Dewar, Jack Williams and Tim Kelly. For the Saints, they get back Tim Membry, Hunter Clark, Dan Butler, and out is Stocker, Cooper Schauman and Lance Collard. Jerry?
I think St Kilda have some big ins with Membry, Clark and Butler. A big out for West Coast with Tim Kelly out, so I think St Kilda might give a chocolate slim.
Well, Tim Membry was actually dropped. He was playing for Sandringham the other week, and a couple of weeks ago it said he was managed, but was that the case? Probably not. He kicked six goals, so I think he's earned his spot. Not much selection pressure, it's fair to say. Toby?
Yeah, I think so. St Kilda at the moment, they're just playing really uninspiring football. I think it's just not exciting to watch. West Coast at home this year have been, I don't know, we're probably not going to read too much into the trip to Adelaide last week. It was 99 points in the end or something. Probably won't go into that too much. I do like West Coast at home. I think they might just have them, but those ins, Membry, Clark, Butler for the Saints, it probably trumps, Edwards, Flynn, Gaff and Petrucelli for the Eagles.
They seem like flat track bullies at the moment, the Eagles. They seem like a whole another team when they play at home, Ethan.
I was literally about to say that. You were saying off air on Monday that they're flat track bullies, and I don't really see that stopping. If you're a flat track bully, then
well,
to what you're good at. They're a different team at home. St Kilda, like Toby said, are in a really bad place right now, and I see West Coast compounding the misery a bit further.
Well, okay. Let's move on to Saturday night, and it's the Cats taking on Richmond in Geelong. So Richmond barely play, never really played at Geelong, really. Can't remember the last time, Toby. But let's have a look at the ins and outs. Gary Rowan and Mark O'Connor come back in. Blixarves and Jai Clark are both suspended. For Richmond, they get Mansell, Jack Graham and debutant Caleb Smith. And Shay Bolton is out, Prestia managed, and Steely Green, what a name, he's dropped, Jerry.
Yeah, well, Geelong haven't won a game in a month, and Richmond haven't won a game in, I think, 2 or 3 months. So I think Geelong should win. It's a game they probably, if they want to keep in touch with the top four, they should win this game.
It would be five losses in a row if Geelong were to win, but it's very unlikely, Toby.
Yeah, so the teams they've obviously lost to, lost to the Giants at home last week. They lost to the Suns up in Darwin, lost to Port at home, lost to Melbourne at the G in a close one, and then beat Carlton the week before that. I think they're due a win. They're not playing great football at the moment. They're due a win. And just quietly, I think this might end up like that Brisbane-Richmond game a couple of weeks ago. I think the Tigers losing Bolden Prestia and only really getting back Jack Graham. Caleb Smith, we don't know because he's on debut. I think it's it might get a little bit ugly this game.
All right, let's move on to Melbourne and Fremantle in Darwin. So Daniel Turner is back for Melbourne and Jacob Van Rooyen is out for Fremantle. Michael Frederick, Sam Sturt are in for Matthew Johnson and Tom Emmett. I'm just not sure about Fremantle and their forward line. Jai Amos, he seems to have lost a lot of confidence in his goal kicking. His run-up is really poor. I'm not sure if you guys have seen it. They've seemed to be a bit of a one-trick pony. If they don't win contested ball, they can't really move the ball out of their back half, Jerry.
Yeah, and Melbourne looked really strong last week against St Kilda. So
Anyone can do that.
Oh, yeah, true. but I think Melbourne will be too strong and down at TO or up in TO.
Yeah, it's a really interesting game for me. I think this is probably one of the games of the round, just for my own interest. I think Melbourne and Freo, they're quite similar teams. Had Freo won last weekend, they'd have the same record going into this game. And I think they have the ball. They use the ball a lot more than Melbourne does. They're a bit more efficient than Melbourne. But yeah, there's a big question mark over their players like Frederick, Jai Miss, as you mentioned, about them to be able to pull a result against players like the D's have got, like Fritsch down forward.
Ethan?
Yeah, Melbourne seem just to have too much for Freo right now. Although Toby said, if it wasn't for last week, they come in with the same record. I think Melbourne have got a lot more to them. I think Freo are maybe a bit of a one-trick pony and fall into the trap of being one-dimensional, and I can see the D's taking advantage of that.
Let's go to the last game of the round on the Goldie, and it's the Gold Coast Suns taking on Essendon. About a 50-50 game. Gold Coast haven't lost at home. They're 4-0 at People First Stadium, and they take on the second-place Bombers. So in for the Gold Coast Suns, Sam Flanders, Ned Moyle and Will Graham. Out is Rogers Witts, that's a big out, and Alex Davies omitted. For Essendon, Harrison Jones and Jai Menzies comes back into the team, and out is Nate Caddy and Alwyn Davey Jr., Jerry.
I still think Essendon are pretenders, so I don't see them winning.
So are the Gold Coast. Yeah. They haven't beaten anyone.
It's a bit of a fortress down at Gold Coast, and I think that winning streak will continue there.
No, I'm with you, Jerry. Essendon, look at who they've beaten in the last couple of weeks. They beat Richmond only by 20, or not even 20 points, 12 points. They took care of your North Melbourne, Jerry. They beat Giants, who I think the Giants are a good side this year. I reckon Giants are going deep. And then they beat West Coast by a goal. Not convinced on Essendon. I think the Suns get it done pretty easy.
It's a Gold Coast clean sweep. I've also got the Suns at home. They've made it into a fortress, and although they've got some big outs, they know how to play it. And I think if the Essendon fall-off is going to start this week, might be the first.
Popular opinions. So we'll start with you, Jerry. You've got one.
Yeah, I think the China game should return for Port Adelaide. A bit of a fortress there, so should return.
Should return.
There's a big come out through the news, hasn't there, this week, the China game. I don't know about it, but I don't know. They didn't see. What do we send Gold Coast up there with Port Adelaide?
I think
should we send a bigger club up there?
I think the Saints coach at the time, Alan Richardson, got food poisoning in 2019, so that wasn't great. But great atmosphere, isn't it?
Yeah.
Up there, yeah, up there.
Maybe we send a game to Vegas. Maybe that's where the next game goes to, rather than China.
Copycatting NRL. Yeah. Oh, where else could you do it, Ethan?
Maybe London.
Oh, London.
It's been done.
A lot of, yeah, a lot has of been Aussie done, expats over in the UK right now.
Okay, I don't mind it. Toby, you've got one else.
Yeah, the one I've got is that I think the NRL team that's been announced during the week in Papua New Guinea, the one that as taxpayers are spending $600 million on, I think it'll flop. I'm not a fan of it. I think it'll flop. I'm not just a bitter rugby man. I think it's going to flop.
What do you think, Ethan?
I think it's a good idea. I don't know if I agree with the fact that it'll flop. I mean, rugby's pretty big in Papua New Guinea and through a lot of the Pacific Islands as well. And I think it's a really good chance for rugby to grow, especially in Australia and all of the places close around it. I don't see why you wouldn't want to expand the game into another part of the world if you got the chance.
So what was it?
Who's $600 million
in taxpayers' money?
Yeah, $600 million. So that works out to be about $24
that's a big,
each as taxpayers we're spending on that.
It's an hour's wage, Ethan.
But think about the current NRL players. You can either live in Coogee and Brisbane, or you can go live in Port Moresby in a gated community. I don't know. I don't know who's going there. I don't know. I'm just not a big fan of it.
I think initially it might have some growing pains, but I think over time, I agree with maybe living in Brisbane and Port Moresby. There's a big difference there. But when you get the chance, I'm not necessarily talking about the bigger names in rugby, but if you want to grow a game where a lot of players from Papua New Guinea can make a name for themselves and those who are passionate about rugby there get more of a look in, I don't see why it's a bad idea.
That's how we wrap up for this edition of the Sports Desk. Thank you so much for your company, and we'll see you on Monday on Sin.